Gulf Coast State College, Anatomy and Physiology, the Autonomic Nervous System. This PowerPoint is short, sweet, kind of to the point. The key things you have to know, notice I've highlighted them, I've starred them, I've underlined them, I've bolded them, or maybe they're in a summary slide. And that's really what I want you to take away from the autonomic nervous system. Those are the things you're going to have to learn or understand long term. So let's start off with a little bit of review. Please remember the peripheral nervous system is divided into three: the somatic, the autonomic, and the enteric. The somatic nervous system, root word soma means your body, remember, controls your body parts. In other words, it controls skeletal muscle and moves your body parts. The autonomic nervous system, which is the topic of the day, controls things that are on automatic, things that are on cruise control. And you should know this by heart, so to speak. It controls smooth muscle, cardiac muscle, and glands. All the things that happen automatically. Then finally, the enteric nervous system, please remember, controls the gut, or the more properly, the gastrointestinal tract. And the nickname for the enteric nervous system is the brain of the gut. Let's give a brief refresher on the somatic nervous system, just the motor pathways we'll talk about here. Then we'll compare and contrast this to the autonomic nervous system, which we'll see is quite different on almost all these bullet points. Number one, under conscious control. In other words, if I want to flex my bicep, I can just go ahead and make myself do it. The axon of just a single motor neuron is always myelinated and extends from the central nervous system somewhere and goes to the skeletal muscle, where that axon will release acetylcholine, a neurotransmitter which is abbreviated ACH. And acetylcholine, when it lands on the skeletal muscle, always causes excitation and contraction of that skeletal muscle. I went ahead and put in a nice expanding red oval around that connection where the nerve meets the muscle. And maybe you already studied that neuromuscular junction earlier in anatomy. Before we do the same thing for the autonomic nervous system, I want to give an overview, a little mini breakdown before we dive into some details. First of all, it is divided into sympathetic and parasympathetic divisions. Remember, the sympathetic is the fight or flight division. It's the scared division. Everything that's kind of going on in your body that's under cruise control when you're scared, that's probably being controlled by the sympathetic division, as opposed to our rest and digest parasympathetic division. All the things pretty much happening in your body when you're resting and digesting, they're under control of the parasympathetic division. And here comes a key point, triple star, so you know you got to know it. Most organs have dual innervation. Dual means two, of course. That means most organs have both sympathetic and parasympathetic innervation. One's the high, one's the low. One's the fast, one's the slow. One's the up, one's the down. One's the yin, one's the yang, whatever that means. And we have something called autonomic tone. Autonomic tone refers to the balance between the sympathetic and parasympathetic activity in an organ. The autonomic nervous system operates mostly through reflex arcs that some genius called autonomic reflex arcs. But the key bullet point, as far as on the bottom of the slide anyway, is you must know the small, magical, powerful part of the brain that is in control of the autonomic nervous system, and it's our friend, the hypothalamus. Yes, the brainstem and spinal cord also help regulate, we'll see, but the hypothalamus is certainly the master. Now let's take a look at the ANS motor pathways. Right off the top, operates without conscious control. Again, we're not thinking about, you know, squishing juice out of our gallbladder like it's go like, you know, doesn't go like that, or I hope not anyway. So it's on automatic. This pathway, this motor pathway, notice has two, not one, but two motor neurons in a chain. The first one is called the preganglionic neuron, and the second one is called the postganglionic neuron, where they come together, where they meet in that junction called a synapse, is a little lump-like structure called an autonomic ganglion. Remember, all that autonomic means is on sort of on automatic, and all that ganglion means is a lump. So this is a lump that's in our automatic nervous system, so to speak. I've highlighted some of these structures. Here comes an arrow on the preganglionic neuron. Here comes an arrow on the postganglionic neuron. And where they meet together is called the autonomic ganglion. The name for the connection, recall, is a synapse. And I think I even put a red expanding oval around it so you see it. So really, what the ganglion is just a lump. And why is it a lump? It's a lump of nerve cell bodies. It's actually the nerve cell bodies of the postganglionic neurons that make it look lumpy in real life. Let's break it down in a little bit more detail. So here comes the preganglionic neuron, because it's before the ganglion. The cell body of the preganglionic neuron is located in the central nervous system. The axon of the preganglionic neuron is always myelinated and always releases acetylcholine at the synapse with the postganglionic neuron. Then, the cell body of the postganglionic neuron is located in the autonomic ganglion, in that little lump. And that lump, of course, is outside of the central nervous system. This is not the brain. This is not the cord. Therefore, all the autonomic ganglion are part of the peripheral nervous system. The axon of the postganglionic neuron is always unmyelinated and may either release acetylcholine in the parasympathetic division or norepinephrine, which of course is mostly going to be what's released in the sympathetic division when we hit the place we get the effect called the effector. Notice also at the very bottom of the slide, the neurotransmitter, whether it's acetylcholine or norepinephrine, may be excitatory or inhibitory. Very interesting. If you check your textbook out at this point in time, it's too deep in detail for our course, but it shows you how these two neurotransmitters may either excite or inhibit different tissues in the body. So check that out in your spare time, but don't waste time memorizing it. This next slide is sort of a summary slide of what we've done. And just to look at, nothing new here. We'll hit a few more details coming up shortly. This slide has one of those embedded animations from your text. Hopefully this is a worthwhile visual for you to check out. Now's where we break it down. First, the sympathetic division, also known as the thoracolumbar division. Why do they call it the thoracolumbar division? Because the cell bodies of the preganglionic neurons that I'm tracing now with my arrow tip are located in the lateral gray horns, our old friends, of the 12 thoracic segments and the first two or three lumbar segments of the spinal cord. So from T1 to L3, that's where the cell bodies of neuron number one, so to speak, are located. So that's how it got the nickname thoracolumbar. Some people may also use the term thoracolumbar outflow, because sympathetic flow is flowing out of our thoracolumbar part of our spinal cord. The axons of those preganglionic neurons will then move on out, and they're going to synapse with the cell bodies of the postganglionic neuron in one of two types of sympathetic ganglion. Yes, for our studying pleasure, there are two types of sympathetic ganglion that the preganglionic and postganglionic neuron may connect at. It either may be a sympathetic trunk ganglion, or the synapse may be at a prevertebral ganglion. Let's look at them one at a time in that order. First, the sympathetic trunk ganglion lie in a vertical row real close to right next to right along each side of the spinal cord. And the axons that come out, of the sympathetic trunk ganglion, they go on to supply or innervate structures that are above the diaphragm. That's one of the key things I want you to know in this unit, that sympathetic trunk ganglia, postganglionic axons, supply structures above the diaphragm. So, I put a red rectangle trying to show you the sympathetic trunk ganglion. Your book has kind of a weak picture here, to say it mildly. Then I drew a line in the sand, notice, about right where the diaphragm would be. And then I put a big red arrow pointing upwards, so hopefully on this slide you'll remain and retain the visual where sympathetic trunk ganglia, as far as their axons, innervate structures superior to the diaphragm. So remember, sympathetic trunk ganglia superior to the diaphragm, as opposed to the second kind of ganglion called a prevertebral ganglion. In other words, some preganglionic axons of the sympathetic division will synapse at a prevertebral ganglion. These ganglion are located anterior to the spinal column, very close to many of the abdominal arteries. You may have learned when you studied the vascular system. I'll give you examples of some names of prevertebral ganglion. You don't have to memorize these, but there's a celiac ganglion that's right near the celiac trunk. There's a superior and inferior mesenteric ganglion that are located right near the superior and inferior mesenteric arteries. And the key point is, the postganglionic axons, the axons that leave the prevertebral ganglia, they innervate or supply structures below the diaphragm. So again, on this slide, to give you a good visual, I drew a box around the basic area where the prevertebral ganglia are located, and then I drew a line in the sand and an arrow pointing downwards. So hopefully you'll remember that the prevertebral ganglion, their axons go to structures below the diaphragm. Here's just a picture for your book. It shows you the complicated nature of the sympathetic nervous system and how the different axons intermingle and intertwine and head different directions and collect together in what we call chains. So this is cute to look at, but a little bit too much detail for our course. There is one special case of the sympathetic division I want you to know. I'll circle it right here on the diagram from your book. It's this middle part of the figure I want you to circle on the slide. Because some preganglionic sympathetic axons extend from the central nervous system and terminate directly in the medulla, the middle, the meat of the adrenal glands. And the medulla of the adrenal glands are actually a very special case. They're basically a modified form of a sympathetic ganglion. And when the preganglionic axon lands on the adrenal medulla, it directly causes release of the neurotransmitters epinephrine with a star and norepinephrine directly into the bloodstream. So this is sort of the odd man out. It's a special case. I'll highlight it. There's a purple line under the adrenal medulla. I got a purple star next to the epinephrine and norepinephrine. And about 80% of the chemicals that come out of the adrenal medulla is actually epinephrine, if anybody ever asked you. The other 20% is the norepinephrine. And again, they're jacked directly into the blood vessels. That's why when you get scared, maybe almost got in a car accident, you notice that immediate effect in your body, and that's because you get a direct injection. You just get jacked full of adrenaline in a fraction of a second because your adrenal glands just squeeze that epinephrine and norepinephrine right into your blood vessels throughout your body. Just wanted to show you a gross anatomy picture. Here's a kidney, and there's the adrenal gland that's kind of added right on top of the adrenal gland. So that's where your adrenaline comes from, the adrenal gland. Then comes the beautiful summary slide. This is key. This is one of those things where I just want you to kind of remember forever. And I'll give you a visual. It's a visual I may have given you before, but I want you to go with it. This division got its name, fight or flight division, years ago when somebody was out and they saw a bear in the woods and they had to decide whether to fight or whether to run. Kind of a dated example that many of us can't relate with. I like to do it this way. All the functions, all the summary that's on the slide can be all put together by just picturing that time, the last time you almost got creamed in the intersection by someone running the red light. All those things that happened, heart started beating faster, blood pressure probably went through the roof, your airways dilated so you could breathe deeper and faster, your pupils were dilated like a scared kitty cat in the dark, probably started sweating, had major effect on smooth muscle and blood vessel walls throughout your body with 6 stars, because the sympathetic division is really primarily what affects our smooth muscle and our blood vessel walls all throughout our body. And a couple of bullet points here. The sympathetic division has wide-ranging effects because it affects all our blood vessels, and blood vessels are everywhere. And what it'll do in this fight-or-flight situation is it'll shunt the blood or direct the blood away from places where you don't need it into places where you do need it. For example, blood vessels to your skin and to your gastrointestinal and your urinary organs are going to decrease. Because if you're, going to fight or run from the bear, that's not a good time to go to the bathroom. And the blood vessels will dilate to other places, like your skeletal muscle, which is going to need it either to run or fight. And it's going to also improve the blood supply to the heart as well. Look what else the sympathetic division does. And again, just picture you just almost got creamed in the intersection. Your adrenal glands are going to squish a bunch of epinephrine and norepinephrine directly into your blood vessels. That's what gives you the immediate effect of all the things on this slide. And when you're fighting or when you're running or whatever, you need energy, right? So it shouldn't surprise you that the sympathetic division also causes your liver to release sugar, your main energy source, into your bloodstream. Over to your right, kind of says what I already said. Sympathetic division, going to reduce saliva, reduce the motility of your digestive tract and your urinary tract, because this is not the time to stop and go to the bathroom, right? So that's why blood flow to those tissues is decreased, and also muscle activity and glandular activity to those organs are decreased as well. Okay, what about the parasympathetic division? Also called the craniosacral division. Why? Well, look where the cell bodies of the preganglionic neurons come from. They come from the brain stem, either cranial nerves 3, 7, 9, or 10, right? And they come out of the brain stem. And also the lateral gray horns of sacral segments 2 through 4 of the spinal cord. That's why they call it cranio for the cranial nerves and sacral for the sacral nerves. So you will also hear the term craniosacral outflow, because the outflow is from the cranium and from the sacral region. So that's how it got its nickname. Let's look at this in a little bit more detail. Again, cranial nerves 3, 7, 9, and 10 contain the preganglionic axons. Here comes those myelinated axons. Those preganglionic axons will synapse with the postganglionic neurons in a ganglion, remember the lump, that is close to or even within the effector organ. They call these terminal ganglia in the parasympathetic division because the ganglia are kind of at the end of the line. I mean, terminal means at the end, and the ganglion are at the end. I mean, they're almost at the effector or even within the effector. So that's a big difference from the sympathetic nervous system we discussed previously. Here's some examples of some ganglion in the parasympathetic division, and some of those ganglion really are located right within the organs themselves or very near the organs that they supply. Some examples, you don't have to memorize these. I think it's too much Trivial Pursuit for our level. For example, cranial nerve 3 axons, they synapse in ganglia that are very close to the smooth muscle inside the eyes. Cranial nerve 7, those axons synapse in ganglion that are very close to both the tear glands and the salivary glands. Cranial nerve 9, those axons synapse in a ganglion that's so close to the parotid gland, it's almost in it. And cranial nerve 10, vagus nerve axons, they extend to many terminal ganglion in the thoracic and abdominal cavities that are really almost within the organs themselves. Fascinating fact at the bottom of the slide, and maybe something you should know, the vagus nerves, so big, so powerful, remember they wander all over the place. As a matter of fact, your book says that 80% of all the parasympathetic autonomic nervous system outflow is carried through the vagus nerves alone. Amazing little bit of info. Now, this is the Mac Daddy slide, okay? These are the ones I really want you to know kind of forever. All the functions here we can remember as yes, rest, and digest. But the example I like to give, and maybe gave one time earlier in this course, is I want you to think couch potato man. If you think of couch potato man, potato with a P, parasympathetic with a P, you'll never forget all the things that are under the control of the parasympathetic division. Here's what you got to picture, though. There's this guy laying on a couch watching a movie, right? Couch potato. Now, the movie, it can't be an action flick. It has to be a mellow movie. It got to be like a chick flick or some kind of tearjerker kind of movie like that. So that when he's watching the movie, he's all relaxed. His heart rate is slow. He doesn't have to breathe deep or heavy, so his airways are constricted. Also, the smooth muscle in his pupils constrict as well. He's crying. He's increasing his tears because it's a real sad tearjerker kind of a movie. The parasympathetic division absolutely does not go to the adrenal gland whatsoever. That would be like opposite land. Parasympathetic increases saliva, increases muscle movement, that is motility of the digestive tract, increases digestive juices and secretions, and also contracts the urinary bladder. Again, couch potato man. He's watching a tearjerker movie. He's crying. He's drinking Pepsi. He's eating pizza. So he's got to digest that, and it kind of, you know, got to make its way through. So it also, you know, in one end, out the other kind of thing. So if you just think of couch potato man watching that sad movie, drinking Pepsi and eating pizza, you know what's under the control of the parasympathetic division with one visual. So while you're making notes on this slide, maybe you're drawing a picture of couch potato man. I want to mention something you probably heard of called vasovagal syncope. Basically, it means fainting. It's one of the reasons people faint. to make a long story short, it's where people go out of balance in their autonomic nervous system. Remember, most organs have a dual innervation, sort of an autonomic tone. The blood vessels happen to be the exception. They mostly get all sympathetic and very little parasympathetic innervation whatsoever. But sometimes what happens is you have a big shift in that balance where the sympathetic innervation, the sympathetic tone in the blood vessel walls goes way, 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 way down, and the parasympathetic goes up a little bit. So the blood vessels dilate. And when the blood vessels dilate, all the blood rushes down to your feet, away from your brain, and then people pass out. So that's all that is, an imbalance in the system where really we're mostly losing the sympathetic tone that we normally keep in the walls of our blood vessels. This slide's kind of just for you. I guess you should know these exist, but I'm not going to dive into any details. There are also autonomic plexuses. Remember, all a plexus is like a lacy network, spiderwebby group of things. In this case, it's a tangled network of axons of both sympathetic and parasympathetic neurons. One you may have heard of, I guess, is the solar plexus. It's also called the celiac plexus because I'm circling the region where the celiac vessels and the celiac plexus is. And you may have heard that if someone gets a punch there, you know, it can really cause a lot of pain and sort of cause them to go right down to the ground. And there's just so many nerves, so many axons all concentrated in one space there. When you get hit there, it's just an overwhelming amount of pain that just makes you buckle down to the floor. Okay, this slide is a summary of the autonomic nervous system. Really nothing new here. Sympathetic versus parasympathetic. Let's do it. Sympathetic, fight or flight. Parasympathetic, rest and digest. So fight or flight, remember, that is almost get smashed in the intersection. Rest and digest, that's couch potato man. This sympathetic division is the scared division. Parasympathetic ain't scared. One's the fast, one's the slow, one's the up, one's the down, one's the high, one's the low, one's the yin, one's the yang. The sympathetic division, remember, has thoracolumbar outflow. Parasympathetic division has craniosacral outflow. The ganglia, remember, in the sympathetic nervous system were sympathetic trunk and prevertebral ganglia. They were both close to the central nervous system. No matter which one of those ganglia we were talking about, they were pretty close to the spinal cord, weren't they? In the parasympathetic, very different. The ganglia where the two neurons met were called terminal ganglia because they ended or were near or in the actual effector organ itself. Sympathetic division, 5 stars. Its effects are distributed throughout the body. Why? Write it down if you don't remember it. One big reason is, number one, sympathetic division controls blood vessels, mostly, and they're everywhere. Reason number two, big one, is that adrenaline from the adrenal glands. That goes pretty much all throughout the body, too, through the blood vessels as well. And the adrenaline compounds also last a longer time in our body. So we really get wide-ranging, longer-lasting effects from the sympathetic nervous system. Think about the last time you really did get scared. I mean, sometimes you're kind of shaking and sweating and white like a ghost. You know, it might last for a little while before you get over it, right? What about parasympathetic? It mostly affects things in the head, thorax, abdomen, and pelvis. So not as wide ranging and not as long lasting. Key points on this slide. Very key. Got another embedded animation here on this slide. Hopefully these are working for you. And finally, we'll wrap up by talking about, in more detail, the neurons, the neurotransmitters, and the receptors in the autonomic nervous system. There are 2 types of neurons in the ANS. One is called cholinergic, one is called adrenergic. We'll talk about those one at a time in that order. First, Cholinergic neurons are called cholinergic neurons because they release the neurotransmitter acetylcholine, typically abbreviated ACH. You need to know where this neurotransmitter is released. This includes all preganglionic neurons in both sympathetic and parasympathetic division. So, I've done some highlighting and animating on the PowerPoints. Here are both in the sympathetic and parasympathetic divisions. I'm showing you the preganglionic neurons, and they're all releasing acetylcholine at the autonomic ganglion. Okay, where else do we have acetylcholine released? All postganglionic neurons in the parasympathetic division release acetylcholine, and I put a nice red expanding oval around acetylcholine being released at the end of a postganglionic parasympathetic neuron. When acetylcholine is released, it binds to receptors. The receptors for acetylcholine are either called muscarinic or nicotinic. You can make up various mnemonics to remember that. One of them could be MAN, M-A-N, MAN for muscarinic, A for acetylcholine, and N for nicotinic. And finally, we'll talk about adrenergic neurons. Adrenergic neurons release the neurotransmitter norepinephrine, typically abbreviated NE. So adrenergic neurons got their name because they release adrenaline-like compounds, things that kind of get us all jacked up. If you're a car person, it's kind of like having NOS, right? That's that gas you hook into your engine to get you that extra boost of power, isn't it? Where do we see this? I'll underline it. In the sympathetic division, most sympathetic postganglionic neurons release norepinephrine. The only exception to the rule you might want to know is the sympathetic division does release acetylcholine on sweat glands. Otherwise, you know, everywhere else, we're releasing norepinephrine from the postganglionic sympathetic neurons. The norepinephrine will bind to receptors, either alpha or beta receptors. I have a mnemonic for that too, if you need one. You can spell out the word BANE, B-A-N-E. The B is for beta, the A is for alpha, and the N-E is for norepinephrine. And that's all I have on this kind of short, sweet, and to the point chapter.